Welcome to the MadTech Podcast special from ExchangeWire, a weekly deep dive into a pressing industry issue.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the special edition of the MadTech Podcast. I'm Rachel Smith, CEO at ExchangeWire, and I'm joined by two very special guests today to discuss a particular topic concerning data distribution. So I'd like to welcome my guests to this session. Bastian Spans, who's Chief Commercial Officer for Digital Audience. Bastian, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That's all. And also we're joined today by Remco Steen, who is Manager of Advertising Technology at Media House in the Netherlands. Remco, welcome.
Thank you, Rachel.
It's good to have you both here. As I said in the introduction, we're going to be talking about data distribution. Very specifically, we're going to touch on a fantastic research report that ExchangeWire has just compiled in conjunction with Digital Audience on the topic of data distribution across the European marketing and advertising industry. What we mean specifically about that is the degree to which brands, advertisers, and agencies and publishers collaborate with their data assets for the purposes of executing marketing and advertising campaigns. So there's lots of threads of conversation to unpick underneath that topic, but I just wanted to, by way of introduction, mention a couple of key findings that came out in this report, which will help to fuel our discussion here today. The first is that across all of the areas that we surveyed, which was a number of markets within Europe, 95% of respondents, so that's publishers, brands and agencies, said that they're very open-minded about collaborating with regards to data distribution. So they're willing to use a number of different tools, whether they be technology tools or to enter into partnerships to collaborate for the purposes of improving the way that they use and execute data, which is really encouraging. But more specifically, we then ask questions around clean rooms. How many people are using clean rooms? Are they a popular tool for data distribution and collaboration? And the results varied. In the Netherlands and the UK, there was quite high usage of data clean rooms for collaboration. And in other markets across Europe, such as Germany and Sweden, there were slightly lower levels of people reporting using clean rooms. So I'd like to unpick that a little bit in a minute. Real-time identity resolution was something that was noted broadly across all European markets as the thing that would really improve and enhance marketing and advertising campaigns, which I thought was really interesting. Some other tactics that were mentioned in the survey that people thought would really make a difference was cross-platform, improving cross-platform match rates, and also improving audience enrichment. So perhaps we can dig around beneath that finding in a moment as well. And then a really interesting point was concerning publishers and how they're experimenting with their monetization strategy, so how they're specifically monetizing their data. And I'd like to ask a couple of questions about that as we go along in our discussion as well. And then coming to one of the key findings that I wanted to kick off our conversation on, which is that 9 out of 10 marketers who were surveyed said that they're activating their customer data across multiple platforms. And in addition to that, 2/3 of the marketers surveyed said that they preferred to use internal tools to onboard their data assets rather than relying on third-party providers to help them with that data onboarding and data collaboration. So that brings me to my opening question to the two of you. I'd like you to tell me a little bit about how Digital Audience and Media House have kind of designed your partnership, what brought you together to work together, and what are you doing with respect to data collaboration to improve and enhance the way that you're activating data? Bastian, we can start with you. You can tell us a little bit about how Digital Audience work with your clients in general and how you came to working closely with Remco.
Yeah. Thanks for the question, Rachel. We work as a data collaboration provider, and we offer our services to brands, publishers, and advertisers, of course, and agencies within the Benelux, Nordics, and Germany. And we are getting launched now in the UK as well, so maybe good to mention. And we have built something like called a data clean room. So everybody knows the box of data clean room, and that's like, okay, what is it exactly? So basically, it's a super safe way for advertisers, publishers, retailers, data partners to work with their first and second party data for both online and offline. And we have also connected it to the marketplaces, so to all the ecosystems outside within the online environment. So we have connected it directly to walled gardens like Google, Meta, Amazon, TikTok, all the programmatic platforms like the Trade Desk, Azerion, Adform, Pubmatic, etc., and of course local publishers. So also to Mediahuis, where we offer our data cleanroom as a secure vault where they onboard their first-party data. And that's how we started to work together. So we had a question from an advertiser who wanted to onboard and to exclude their current clients for a campaign into Mediahuis. So, and then, we of course had to connect with Mediahuis to get their first-party data onboarded within the cleanroom to create an overlap and to push back the IDs to Mediahuis in order to target or not target that audience. And in 2024, we deepened our partnership because we saw that there was more to do about it. And how can we, on a first party way, recognize and monetize better? And then we saw Remco and me discussed how we can intensify our relationship by also offering a way how we can create their graph and add it to other second party data parties, like offline data providers, to give them better insights, to get a better recognition, and to also enrich their audience profiles. For instance, for age and gender, which is really basic, but if we can increase the match rates for age and gender, that will directly benefit, for instance, their video campaigns.
Yeah.
And of course, new personas, which is asked by advertisers. And at the end, at the end, we all want to create a better and more precise first-party targeting offering with privacy in its core with for Mediahuis. So yeah. That's how yeah. we are started our corporation.
So you mentioned there, Baz, so many key things that are critically important when it comes to effective marketing and advertising, both for the publisher, but also for the brand and the advertiser. Remco, can you tell me a little bit about why working with digital audience was attractive to you? Because Baz has covered quite a lot there, not only how you can make best use of your data as a publisher, but maybe also how it can perhaps lead to the way that you might build out your data monetization models, you know, being a bit more precise about the data that you can offer. Does that change the way in which you can offer those data segments up to potential customers and clients? So yeah, tell me a bit about your perspective of the partnership and what attracted you to working with Digital Audience.
Yes, well, from a historical perspective, you know, after the deprecation of the third-party cookies, like the whole market was looking for proper solutions which could replace that model, right? So the whole business was basically using third-party cookies to sustain their business. So the third thing that we obviously came across was to start using a data clean room, just pure email matching.
Yep.
But and initially we worked with several clean rooms. You know, we would like to facilitate, let's say, the wishes of the buy side. And we started to use running email campaigns. However, if you look at the characteristics of Mediahuis, we are a Dutch national news publisher, mainly publishing broad news, right? So this brings along a rather low locked-in reach, which is not very nice to have when you start to use email matching campaigns.
Yeah.
So actually we quickly found out that our limited locked-in reach led to low match rates and as a result, let's say, under delivery of campaign budgets. So we then started to look for a solution that could basically materialize, increase match rates and go beyond email matching to unlock larger advertiser budgets. And that's where we started the brainstorm sessions with Digital Audience, because they have their ID graph solution with a strong presence in the Netherlands, which goes much beyond only email matching. And together with DA, we built a setup that also uses first-party identifier across all our web and mobile web visitors, which enables a digital audience to cover our full reach.
Yeah.
And then to get back to your questions, this not only added new data segments to our B2B portfolio, data segments such as household income and social class, which we previously were not able to target on. But they also helped us to increase not only the match rate of email matching campaigns, but they also expanded our existing data segments like age and gender, for example.
Hmm. Fantastic. I mean, that's a really powerful narrative, right? You started with your own data and your own, customer emails that didn't really yield very much for you. And together with Digital Audience, you were able to, add their data capabilities via the ID graphs to create something a lot more sophisticated that ended up giving you much better audience reach, but also fresh data that you could be then using together with your first-party data signals across all the other properties that you own. So, from a publisher perspective, how much of this, how difficult was it to pull all of this together? Were there some issues and challenges when you first started that very initial, clean room process? Were there some challenges internally or strategically that held you back? Or was it a case that as soon as you could work out, what Digital Audience was able to do for you and what other capabilities they were able to add on, it was smooth sailing? And where I'm going here is, were there some concerns around data privacy? Were there concerns around where the data might come from for the ID graph that Digital Audience has pulled together? What are some of the key things that as a publishing house you might have had to consider along the way?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, our view on user privacy is that we do not wish to share our data externally.
Yep.
Right? So everything we do and we build together with Digital Audience has the main purpose of targeting within our own premises, our own network. Obviously, for everything that has to do with PII, the DPO is looking over my shoulder as well as the legal department. But we were in close collaboration with them, and we analyzed everything. And we are well within the GDPR
parameters.
Yes.
Yeah.
To add here a little bit, Rachel, it's of course at the end, it's all based on the cleanroom technology. So at the end, the data is onboarded within the own environment of Mediahuis and will not leave that environment. And that's of course also a very important thing to make sure that you are privacy compliant.
Yeah.
So I think that's to add on that one, I think that's an important one. We see data cleanroom more as a functionality to make sure, because it's a checkbox you need to make sure, because without that, you cannot work on your first party data. So that's for us a very important, maybe differentiator from the others, that we see it as a functionality, but we want to make sure that they can activate and that they can use all their audiences or enriched audiences and recognition on scale. So that's, I think, a nuanced difference between the different vendors as well.
And from a Digital Audience perspective, Baz, as you started working with media owners such as Mediahuis, was this a sort of a common challenge that you were coming across, that maybe publishers have a certain amount of data that can be ingested into a clean room, but the match rates aren't great, and so they need other indicators to improve that? Was that something that was very common, or are we talking about quite a different profile depending on what type of publisher you are? As Remco mentioned, Mediahuis is a news publisher. What about other publishers that you've worked with?
Now, news publishers have one advantage, is that they have a big skill and a lot of content. But at the end, what I saw with other publishers as well, that they don't always have the right consent to make sure that they can target their users or logged in users. Yep. So that's a very important part. Secondly, we saw that a lot of the publishers are also having all different systems to onboard data everywhere. But if you can centralize that, via, in this case, digital audience, you can automate your whole onboarding process, which directly reduces errors and accelerates integrations immediately. And it makes collaboration, in essence, more efficient. If you have one audience you want to onboard, for instance, you don't need to onboard it in all different platforms. You just need one in order to create a central hub and to onboard all the different audiences within the destinations of use. Yeah. And with publishers, we see that there is always a big problem with logged in usage, and what Remco already mentioned before. So to add online and offline together, that you can create more IDs with a certain logged in usage or create lookalikes from a seed data, make sure that you can scale and have better targeting than only on click and serve behavior within your network.
Yeah. Again, super powerful, just being able to add all of those data signals together. Also being able to do that through a sort of a single platform or a unified platform. I can imagine how that would be much easier from a user point of view, but also perhaps something that's more privacy compliant as well, easier to satisfy privacy requirements. I want to change gears a little bit for a minute and talk a bit about then the buy and the sell side of the advertising and marketing transaction. Remco, question for you in the first instance. Have you, since using this approach to data collaboration and data activation, what kind of improvement have you seen in terms of the type of segments that you're able to offer up to your buyers? Are you starting to see that, you know, you're really able to offer up very specific segments to some of your buyers? Is that improving the transaction with your customers? Has it improved your revenue from that perspective? Obviously, your data is arguably better organized and maybe easier for you to segment that data. What has that been like for the other side of that transaction, your clients and customers who are agencies and brands that are buying your inventory?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think looking at the number of campaigns that we use data targeting on and looking at which data is being targeted, I think the majority of the targeting still is pretty broad, but at basic. So age and gender is by far the most used data. So we were very, very happy that we saw that those segments were seriously increased, because obviously also when you have a low locked-in reach, you don't have that much, let's say, first-party deterministic data. So the data segments age and gender were seriously increased by working with a digital audience. Which data segments are also very popular, so to say, are the ones that I mentioned previously that we didn't have before, like social class and income class, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
So that's made arguably a massive difference to the way that you can offer up part of your audience, right? You now know which element of your audience satisfies those demographic criteria, which would be very valuable for brands and marketers. Baz, question to you then, thinking about some of the other clients that you might work with across the advertising and marketing sphere, and going back to the research report where we found that 2/3 of marketers prefer to use internal tools to onboard data assets, what would you say to some of those marketers to sort of convince them that maybe working with a third-party provider and a partner will improve that experience, will maybe, you know, make it easier for them to understand what data assets are available, organize their own data assets, and basically get a more effective outcome for their marketing campaigns? What's your experience of working with those brands?
Well, my experience is again, what I'm just mentioning is that it all starts with consent. Get consent on the data of the advertiser or marketer that they can use that for advertising purposes. Secondly, what I mentioned was workflow, that you can have one central system where you can onboard one time an audience and can push it to all the destinations of choice. So Google, Meta, Amazon, but also to Media House or to Trade Desk or Azerion or Pubmatic. Depends what you're using for your advertising activation and monetization, obviously. And thirdly, it's all about skill. So if you work with an onboarding provider, you can enrich your data via, indeed, our consented ID graph, second-party data, But you can also collaborate with other data partners like retail media networks, other publishers, or maybe even other advertisers in order to combine and to make sure that you target the right audience at the right moment at the right time, which is at the end the promise we all are giving to the market for 20 years, as long as I worked in online advertising. And at the end, yeah, you want to create quality targeting, but also reach. And that's to Remco's point. That's what we need to combine IDs towards to in order to make sure that you create the right skill to target your audience within the destination of choice.
Yeah. And do you think as well, reading through some of the results of the research report, which we'll be publishing alongside this podcast, by the way, for everyone listening, so I highly recommend that you download it to give it a quick read. Reading some of those results, there seemed to be a lot of sentiment from especially brand marketers, agencies too, but mostly brands themselves. They're willing to experiment, but they haven't had much experience of experimenting with other platforms that can help them do this data collaboration. Do you think that there is a capacity issue perhaps within brands? You know, they don't have the right people internally or the right volume of people. And actually that's where a platform like Digital Audience could help, right? The whole idea is that you can do that job for them, or you can at least show them how it can be done within the platform.
Yeah, at the end, for us, it's you only need a CRM marketer or someone who is doing the operation out around advertising can also work with Digital Audience. So we have a low-code, easy-to-access platform where you can easily onboard your data, but also automate all total workflow, also for opt-in and opt-out. So you make sure that the DPO is also happy because you only work with consented data. And if they opt-out, it will take it out of the audience. And what we see is that at the end, they have a big problem with enrichment. So with match rates, also what Remco has on his side, marketers and advertisers also have it on their side. So at the end, if we can help them to increase those match rate to run a proper campaign that helps to deliver results for them and getting a better ROI and a return on investment, in essence, you can even calculate that back. And because you can calculate it back, for instance, within search, or within social for consideration, or within ad awareness, maybe within the bigger local publishing houses, you make sure that you can also explain the better results for your advertiser. And the internal person, so the buying persona within and the marketer, can also explain it internally to maybe the CMO that this is a better way of working and getting better results and less time and less mistakes making as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Remco, was that your experience as well? Did it improve things within Media House from a sort of efficiency point of view? Did you need lots of people to be working on this with you to get it set up and running? Or are there some other barriers that made it a bit difficult to start with?
Yeah, I think we are in the fortunate situation that we have a lot of knowledge and expertise in-house, definitely regarding data. So we have our own data team. Historically, we have always been working with a data management platform. We have a strong, let's say, collaboration with our B2C departments, who are responsible for the logged-in reach. So from our side, it was rather easy to explore new ways of working with data, such as we did with Digital Audience. So yeah, not too much hassle, I would say.
Yeah, okay. Looking towards the future now, what other developments can you see coming down the line with respect to data collaboration? From your point of view, Remco, what other developments would you like to see come down the line that can help you even further monetize and activate your data or add to your data, store?
Yes. So the low logged-in reach that we experience is something that we go all in with to increase this. So we are allocating a lot of resources to significantly increase the logged-in reach. Despite all the new and profitable ways of working, such as with Digital Audience, we still aim to seriously increase our logged-in reach, simply because the identifier is much more permanent.
Persistent. Yes, yeah, absolutely. And presumably as well, because it's important for you to have this direct relationship with your readers and your customers and your clients, right? It helps from a brand building point of view in a world where, you know, content online is fast becoming cannibalized by, you know, AI search. It's really all the more important for you to still remain top of mind when people are looking for trusted news sources and content, et cetera. So any way that you can keep those clients and customers logged in helps you with that, right?
Absolutely. And I think we have the momentum in terms of that, you know, consumers are getting more aware of the fact that it's becoming more common to be able to log in to premium news environments to read the content, to get access to the content,
yeah,
which 10 years ago was absolutely impossible.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's changed in quite a short period of time too. And I feel as though it's helping everybody understand that relationship between content that I consume, as you mentioned it earlier on, and what, who pays for that content. You know, it's common for us as consumers of content online to expect to not have to pay for that, but people need to understand there's a value transaction there somewhere. And I think that logged in level helps with that, right?
The strange thing is, indeed, to Remco's point, they're more used to logged in, but and at the end, everybody is expected to consume the content for free. Mm-hmm. But we have never had a bigger subscription market worldwide than we have today. I have like five streaming services. I have two newspapers. I have an account on the local financial publisher. So it's to pay for certain content is more and more common.
Absolutely.
Than we did before. And it's more about a market which is now based on choice. And then the question is, where are you going to reach and target your, for instance, your customers from an advertiser perspective, but also from a publisher perspective? How can you create this killer first party data strategy to keep these people engaged with your content, to give them even more and to make it more personalized as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel as though that mixed monetization model for publishers, some yeah. form of subscription, advertising, and maybe even monetizing your data assets is going to be, you know, really important going forward. And I also think that from a consumption point of view, we are absolutely getting much more used to subscribing for certain types of content, understanding the link between the quality of that content and what it costs to produce it and provide it, as well as the role that advertising plays in that. Because not only do we have more subscription services than we ever did before, 10 years ago, we were not watching Netflix with ads. Now we're watching Netflix with ads. You know, I think everybody yeah. is realizing that there needs to be a combination of those two things in order for this, you know, for us to be able to pay the journalists to produce the information and the actors to, you know, to star in the shows. It's not going to be consumed for free from now on, because that's just not possible, I think.
Mm.
Baz, just to then summarize as well, further to the question that I just asked Remco there, what other developments are you seeing coming down the line with respect to data collaboration, and what particularly are you looking forward to? Any particular innovations that you're seeing come up from a technical point of view, or maybe even just improvements in partnerships across the full spectrum of the industry? So not just with your publisher clients, but perhaps also with some yeah. brand and advertiser clients.
I see more and more collaborations going on between, of course, retailer and commerce parties, payment providers, etc., which have got a lot of logged in data as well, but also have got a lot of information about their clients, which they maybe want to also create a business case towards too. In retail media, you already see that's almost, it's a big margin business, and retail media in general is low margin business. So you see that there is a lot of push towards retail media on site now, and off site they still need to make that really valuable. So on site with the sponsored products and that all works, but it needs to also now, how can we bring that maybe off site as well, and also with non-endemic brands and not only endemic brands. And I see that there is a big push for that as well. We also, for instance, work with offline data providers like YouGov for shopping segments, which we help them to onboard their coffee buyers or Coca-Cola drinkers, etc., into the ecosystem, which can be found back to within Media House. And we see that more and more of these clients, partners, see that this is a really valid business case in order to increase their revenue bottom line.
Yeah.
Secondly, I think at the end, because of the scale, lookalike modeling is an important topic as well. And not based on what I said, click and serve behavior, but really based on your persistent identifiers and to create a lookalike based on that, on within your first party data assets. And then I think AI will really important will be really important there as well, because I think if you onboard your audience, you can enlarge your audiences by using LLM models to create bigger volume for advertisers. Now you can then really target advertisers for campaigns at scale, and this is something which can also maybe be helpful to compete more with the walled gardens from a local perspective. Because they have everything on first-party data. They have everything. They're not relying on third-party cookies. Everything is super accurate. But at the end, the more Remco gets his first-party data in, really a killer first-party data strategy, he can then collaborate with all these offline data partners for second-party data based on his first-party. And then using great formats and create maybe self-service even in the future. And then you mimic or create even better offering than in the walled gardens in local markets, because at the end it's all about trust and quality data and smart collaboration as well. And content, I think, is a very crucial piece in the puzzle, which ad tech sometimes misses.
I mean, that's a really good point, right? Which is that Remco's audience, I would argue, is much more valuable than the audience that we might be finding in other environments. And the content that your audience is consuming, Remco, is also much more valuable than the content that's being consumed in other environments. So it's about connecting that super valuable audience and that super valuable content with other data touch points that can help that, you know, help to build the efficiency of that marketing and advertising activation. Maybe Remco, just one final word from you on that. You know, how are you finding your ability, I suppose, to provide these additional audiences that brands and advertisers might be looking for so that they can target them in other environments? Is that one element of your first party data strategy?
Yeah. If we look at us, or let's say news or traditional publishers compared to walled gardens, you know, obviously we cannot match their raw scale and reach, but we do outperform on exactly that, on environment. You know, we have a premium brand safe journalistic context, free of fake news and conspiracy content and whatever kind of shady content. So our visitors drive basically higher quality attention. And as a result of that, you know, if we look at our advertising solutions, our products that we sell to advertisers, we have a new kind of metric that we call quality view, which is getting more and more important in those products. And basically a quality view is a 15-second view on an ad or a branded article, for example. And this is something that, we can definitely outperform walled gardens with.
Yeah, fantastic. I feel as though there's lots of other things that we could be diving into in a bit more detail, but we've run out of time. I want to say a huge thank you to Baz and to Remco for joining me on this podcast. I think we only just tapped at the very top of the conversation around data collaboration, but we can definitely provide a bit more detail if by sharing the report with everybody. It's a really interesting research report that you should dive into. I'm moderating a panel late next week with Digital Audience on this very topic here in London, so we're looking forward to that. And Baz and Remco, I hope to continue the conversation with you over the coming months as we learn a little bit more about your data collaboration efforts, specifically within Media House, Remco. It would be great to dig into a bit more detail behind some of the things we've talked about today and have a couple of more discussions either at ATS events coming up next year as we start to see how all of this unfolds from an industry point of view. So once again, thank you very much, Baz, and thank you very much, Remco, for joining me.
Thank you, Rachel, for having us. Yeah.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. That was the Mad Tech Podcast. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to this MadTech podcast special. We'll be back to discuss another hot industry topic soon.